The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
So, are we going to talk about it?
What?
The elephant in the room.
What elephant?
Mom's new job.
It's time to make some wrong things right. Help me bring supers back into the sunlight. We need to change people's perceptions about superheroes, and Elastigirl is our best play.
Better than me?
Whoa! I like Mom's new job!
Bye, sweetie.
I'll watch the kids, no problem.
That's not the way you're supposed to do it, Dad. They want us to do it this
way. I don't
way.
Know that way. Why would they change math? Math is math.
Okay,
math
Dad.
Is math. Hello?
Hey, honey.
How are the kids?
Everything's great.
Is she having adolescence?
And Jack-Jack?
He's in excellent health.
Oh, what the?
Num-num cookie.
Oh, my God.
Cookie.
Wow, gay. That is freaky.
You know it's crazy, right? To help my family, I gotta leave it. To fix the law, I gotta break it.
You've got to, so our kids can have that choice.
Thank you, young man.
That's the trailer for a movie that debuts tomorrow after a long, long wait. The fans of the first Incredibles movie, 14 years later, get a sequel, Incredibles 2. Now, the movie comes out tomorrow, but in advance of that, we're going to be reviewing the movie The Incredibles. For a lot of people, it's a classic. It is one of those animated films that kind of got everything right. It was entertaining. It was funny. It was also about a family, and it's near and dear to many people's hearts. What about the sequel? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be reviewing the movie The Incredibles, its forthcoming sequel, and talking a little bit about that as well. Pastor Ted Geese joins us. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
How do you account for the popularity of the first Incredibles movie that came out some time ago?
Well, I think that there's a couple things. Back in 2004 when it came out, which is like forever ago, it seems like, it was not a regurgitation of previous things. It was like brand new. It was like a new idea. They were not riffing on something else exactly. So there was a freshness to it. Also, back then, all of this computer animation stuff was newer. Like, it was these Pixar kind of style movies were kind of a newer thing back then. So there was a little bit of novelty probably attached to that part of it. Plus, the other thing is that it was a superhero film that was focused on a family. So here it is, a family movie that you could take your family to, and then you would see roughly, you know, the same sort of makeup of your family up on the screen. So I think that would also be something that would be appealing to a vast majority of the people who probably went and saw the film when it first came out.
What is the premise of both the first and this second film? What's it about?
The first film is essentially a superhero film. It kind of riffs on a couple things. I said that it was a fresh, brand new thing, but it does kind of fit into some of the ideas that were kind of out there with, like, even the X-Men and some stuff like that in some of the comic books, that you know, you have all of these superheroes out there doing stuff, and there's lawsuits, and there's the government gets involved in things, and basically they all have to kind of disband and say that they're not going to be superheroes anymore and live life kind of almost like in a witness protection program. So what happens is that the two, the father and the mother, the father played by Craig T. Nelson and the mother played by Holly Hunter doing the voices, they're the parents in this family. That's Bob Parr and Helen Parr. And Bob is Mr. Incredible and Helen is Elastigirl. And of course they've gotten married and they're having some kids. And what ends up happening is that they have a superhero family with their three kids, and the youngest, the baby, Jack-Jack, is they figure doesn't have any special superpower abilities. But they have to kind of live just a regular life in the world and not draw attention to themselves. And every time they end up drawing attention to themselves, they have to move to a new town or something. So, and, you know, take on a new life, etc. So this is the thing. It all kind of sets up like that. But now, of course, the father is and the mother are kind of hitting, you know, into their middle age, I guess, and they miss the past, and particularly the dad, and he has an opportunity then to go and relive a little bit of what he had done in the past, and then it all kind of unfolds from there. There's kind of a Dr. No style James Bond island that he doesn't seem to realize that a supervillain is running, and then everything kind of unfolds from there.
A question from a listener, Stephen, in San Leandro, California, with respect to the sequel. What took so long? Do we have an answer to that question?
There actually kind of is an answer. So I was looking around and I found an article from ing.com. And in it, the writer-director, Brad Bird, talks about how it came down to story. So what he said was, the thing is, he says, this is a quote from him, many sequels are cash grabs. Says a Bird told the reporters during a recent press event to promote Incredibles 2. So he was telling a bunch of reporters this. There's a saying in the business that I can't stand, Bird says, where they go, if you don't make another one, you're leaving money on the table. It's like money on the table is not what makes me get up in the morning. Making something that people are going to enjoy 100 years from now, that's what gets me up. So if it were a cash grab, we wouldn't have taken 14 years. It makes no financial sense to wait this long. It's purely that we had a story we wanted to tell.
What is he saying there?
Well, I don't know. I guess we could like try to peel back, pop the hood on that and think about it. Like, I, you know, maybe he's got some integrity when it comes to that and he doesn't just want to grind something out. You know, so he said, though, that he did have a little further in that same article. He talked about how that when the first film had ended, when it was still in development, he was already thinking about primary storylines that could be in Incredibles 2. But the question was how to get it to where he wanted it to be. So he said the two ideas that were in my head, he said, is as the first movie was ending, was a role switch between Bob and Helen and showing Jack-Jack's power and exploring them, making Jack-Jack a main character rather than a side character. So those were things that were in his mind. And then he says, those were in from the beginning and never left the project. What changed is the villain plot, and that shifted endlessly. It drove me insane because I always was faced with the release date, and if something didn't work, I couldn't sit there and try to bang on it. I had to throw it away immediately and go to another idea to solve some of the issues that the first idea didn't have. So that half of the story was the shifting thing. So it was always shifting around. So it seems like the family related stuff he didn't have as big a problem with, but it was the question about how does that, what kind of villain do you have for this second film? The first film, the villain was this Incrediboy, the little sidekick that wanted to be a sidekick to Mr. Incredible, who's shunned and spurned and then grows up to become the villain of the movie. So, you know, what kind of villain, I guess, is the thing that was, he's saying, is the thing that slowed down the whole process.
Talk a little bit about, and I think this applies not only to the previous film, The Incredibles, but also if the trailers are any indication, also The Incredibles 2. Talk about the the way that the father is depicted here, especially in that first film, as frustrated, not living up to his potential, kind of longing for his glory days.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting element of the film. Like, I had not seen The Incredibles, the original one, until just this last weekend. It just was a blank patch in my film going. And Michelle and my wife and I sat down and watched it. And we were surprised just how much it dug into the parents in this story, like getting into their psyche and their story. In fact, you know, like it takes about an hour for it to really kick in. For a lot of the special, like the big fancy kind of like, you know, action sequence stuff. I imagine that parents that watch throw this on with the kids, probably after a while from repeat viewing, that they probably started about an hour in to get to all the stuff on the island with the whole family involved of superheroes. But you're right, like the character played by Craig T. Nelson, Bob Parr, he's got kind of like a daily grind kind of job, and he wants that. He's thinking back to all of that, and that actually is what builds tension or drives dramatic tension within the film, because eventually he, and this is the good part about it, is that he's making bad choices, actually. Like, he's lying to his wife, like he goes off and does these superhero things without telling her. Instead of confiding in her, he's doing all of this. But in the end, he actually is repentant of that. And the family kind of comes together as a team in the midst of all of it. And he, at one point, he even says that, you know, like he was like searching for this big adventure, but the biggest adventure of all was his marriage with his wife, you know, was the thing. And he truly does love his wife. He's just on this bit of a misguided track along the way in this first film.
Listeners have concerns about the film. Erica in Jackson Beach, Florida says, I loved The Incredibles. It was a family movie that had superheroes in it, unlike so many other films that switch the two. The focus to me with the original was always the family. It was a very real family with very real issues, such as concern about infidelity, depression, the confusion of familial roles, etc. It had a necessary darkness that mirrored the very real sinful world we live in today. I worry with this new film, in light of a post-Avengers era, that the focus will be solely on the superhero aspect and lose the focus on family. Will the new film retain what made the first so revolutionary and relevant? I love superheroes, but I love the family storyline more and anything superheroes can offer too. What would you say to that?
I don't think that's not a misguided worry. I would hope that they would do that too, that they would still focus on the family. I've not watched very many trailers. I watched one trailer once for the second film because I like to go into movies not knowing too much. But the trailer I saw was the father discovering that the baby, Jack-Jack, has actually got, you know, superpowers. And it was, you know, pretty funny, a good little trailer. And it occurred to me watching the first film that when the audience gets to know that Jack-Jack has superpowers, the rest of the family doesn't know it. They're from way from a distance. They can't see what's going on. They don't know what happened exactly. So the big reveal, and I don't know when it's going to be revealed in the second film, in the first 5 minutes or like 25 minutes in or a half hour into the film or whatever. But at some point, that character, Jack-Jack, has got special, you know, superpower abilities also. So, you know, like just getting a little bit from what the director had said about the writing process, we can see that the focus will be on the mother, like Holly Hunter's character of Helen Parr, Elastigirl. So are they going to go into the same sort of psychological landscape that they went into with Craig T. Nelson's character of Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible? You know, is it going to be a companion piece in a way to the first film, or are they going to ditch a lot of the family related stuff? I liked the family related stuff in the original film, and I would hope that they would not ditch that. It's kind of interesting too, because like that film, the first one came out in 2004. It's a whole different time back then, practically. Like in the last 5-10 years, so many things have kind of been eroding and changing and like shifting around in culture in North America, you know. So you have back then, you have this intact family with a mother and a father that actually love each other, you know, even if they have problems. find each other attractive, you know, even after they've had three kids, and there are no LGBTQ characters in the film at all. So, you know, what, you know, it's almost subversive. You know, when you watch the original, it wasn't subversive then, but it's almost like subversive now. Like if you're, you know, that kind of particular, you know, party line, the question is, and I think it's a good one, you know, like, are they going to keep focus on that, what would now be a subversive storyline with this family, the way that they've portrayed it, or are they going to go somewhere else with it to please a particular kind of audience?
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie The Incredibles in light of its sequel coming out tomorrow here on Issues Etc. When we come back, some more listener questions on the film having to do with the LGBTQ agenda. Stay tuned. Is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
The Lord bless us, defend us from all evil, and bring us to everlasting life. Amen.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
40 Years Greatly Blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. Ed Gruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at AdCruesome.com. That's AdCruesem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie The Incredibles, awaiting its sequel tomorrow as it is released. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. The Lutheran Witness magazine interprets the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. Men at Church is the theme of the latest issue, and it contains columns from Issues Etc. regular guests Joel Bierman, Jeff Hemmer, and Hans Feeney, Matt Harrison, and Dr. John Kleinig. You can learn more at cph.org/witness, cph.org/witness, the Lutheran Witness magazine. Pastor Geese, this is a question from Kelsey, picking up on something you were saying before the break. With how Disney and Pixar have been pushing the boundaries of the LGBTQ-ish characters, I'm very worried about this movie as it centers on the family. What are your thoughts there?
I would be surprised if there wasn't some kind of character in it. I mean, we've on Issues Etc. talked about like Beauty and the Beast, which is a live action film, that a version of the cartoon that they had come out recently. We talked about that in connection to that film. Of course, Disney also owns all the Star Wars stuff. So they're, you know, we just talked about the Han Solo movie, and the, you know, there was, it's not like stated exactly in the film, but the writers of the film, the son, Jonathan Kasdan, said that Lando Calrissian character is pansexual. And in the movie, he's got a relationship with his droid, kind of a female droid. So the idea that Disney somehow would have a film like this and not include something in that kind of rainbow of stuff would be a surprise. I guess it depends on how much creative control the director has, and depends on where he's at with things, I guess. It is a perfectly good thing to be concerned about. The other kind of curious thing, and now this isn't a Disney film, but I don't know if you remember when we were talking about How to Train Your Dragon 2. Do you remember back to when we talked about that?
Oh, very vaguely, yes.
Okay, so that one also came out on the Father's Day weekend. And in that one, the father dies. I don't know if you remember our conversation about that, but, you know, and here we have Incredibles 2 coming out on the Father's Day weekend. So, you know, like, you have all sorts of weekends to choose in the whole entire year. So, you know, they can't not know that it's the Father's Day weekend when they decide to release a family film on that weekend, right? So, you know, what happens in this movie? I don't know yet because I haven't seen it. But, you know, is this going to be the kind of thing that would, you know, support and lift up, like, you know, the actual biblical view of family or not? And even would it lift up and hold up what the actual normal, like the gold standard of what family ought to be within North American culture, the way that it had been presented over the past, like, let's say 60 years before the wheels started falling off just now? You know, like, what are we going to get? Is that is a question I've got going into the film.
Johanna in Illinois says, in the first movie, the characters' plot lines and superpowers doubled as commentary on their familial vocation. Dad is the strong protector and provider. Mom is flexible and stretches herself to meet her children's and her husband's needs. The teenage girl makes herself invisible and puts up barriers. The little boy is everywhere at once and never slows down. The baby presents unlimited, unpredictable potential. It is only by capitalizing on their strengths and covering each other's weaknesses that they are able to succeed. Bob cannot do all the intricate tasks that Helen can do, and Helen can never be as strong as Bob, so they need each other to get the job done. The sequel is debuting on Father's Day weekend, as you mentioned. And Johanna writes, which I don't think is a coincidence, the trailers show that this movie will center around a role reversal. Helen goes back to work, and Bob must run the home. Based on what has been revealed thus far, do you think that the sequel will renege or reiterate the moral and the values of the original? Will it affirm and celebrate the vocations of father and mother, or pander to those who claim that the nuclear family is an archaic institution?
Smartest listeners in radio, this is great. This is a really good assessment of the first film. And I think these are perfectly legitimate worries about where things might go in the second. Now, certainly, I think that this is where things are going to go with the broad strokes of how it's put together. The question is, in the, you know, more fine details, you know, is that family dynamic retained, like she was saying? I would be very disappointed if it was reneged on. That would be a sad thing to me. Because I think that first film is a real gem. And carrying through that would be really excellent. And I don't want to see them renege on it. That's for sure.
Gerald has a different concern. It has to do with what is reported to be the main actor or character in the next film, which is going to be Little Jack-Jack. Mostly comic relief in the first film. Gerald says, with the baby turning into what looks like a demon, how does a Christian react to enjoying a film that has a family with what appears to be a demonic baby Is there going to be an exorcism that's performed on the baby, says Gerald. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't know. That was kind of a peculiar thing to have this little demon baby moment in the first film at the end there. That was the part where people couldn't really see, like the family couldn't see what was going on, but the baby was being kidnapped by Syndrome, the villain, and you know, defended himself, this little baby. Yeah, this is weird. So the question is that like a one-off thing? Like in the trailer that I saw, it was more like the baby like shoots laser beams out of his eyes and stuff like that. So what is the nature of what Jack-Jack's superpowers are? And like, is it kind of one of these things like, I don't know, the wheel on Wheel of Fortune or something, where it's like it's spinning and we'll see where it lands on, like, you know, what his normal, regular, consistent, special ability is or not. I don't know. But yeah, if it's a kind of a regular thing throughout the whole movie that he turns into a little demon baby, that could be kind of an off-putting weird thing. I don't think that would be particularly helpful. So I don't know where they're going to go with that. And I would hope that they don't make that a big part of what that character is about.
I'm thinking back 14 years when I first watched this. I was an entirely different place in my life with my kids being small at the time. I think one of them was probably 8 and the other one was 12. So right at the sweet spot.
Right.
And we were as a family right at the sweet spot for this film. I remember watching it and saying, now that was what these animated films ought to be every time. It was greatly entertaining, but it didn't have to preach, have an agenda, submit to some sort of, you know, the latest kind of social trend. The whole thing was kind of set in a classic world that was set apart from kind of a 50s-ish world that was set apart from all the realities. Just good family entertainment. What are your expectations for its sequel?
I wonder if they're going to, like, carry on this particular idea. And there was this idea that was, I think now, when you look at it, it's, I don't think it was subversive then, but I think that in a way that there are people who would find it subversive now, this particular subtext within the film. I don't know if you remember this. So like there was a part where Dash, the little son who's very fast, says to his mother, "You always say do your best, but you don't really mean it. Why can't I do the best that I can do?" And by the end of it, the mother says, "Everyone's special, Dash." And then Dash says, which is another way of saying, "No one is." So, and then that gets picked up later in the film when Mr. Incredible is talking to Syndrome, the villain, and Mr. Incredible says, "You mean you killed off real heroes so that you could pretend to be one?" And Syndrome says, "Oh, I'm real, real enough to defeat you. And I did it without your precious gifts, your oh-so-special powers. I'll give them heroics. I'll give them the most spectacular heroics anyone's ever seen. And when I'm old and I've had my fun, I'll sell my inventions so that everyone can be superheroes. Everyone can be super. And when everyone's super, no one will be." So this is a very, I think when I see that now, like I found that to be kind of, in our current climate, to be kind of subversive. Because the thrust is that it's okay for some people to be really good at things and to actually work to excel at it, to be good at those things, like to be heroic in the things that you're good at. And then the other part of it is that, you know, this idea that everybody has to be special. Everybody has to be special. And that's kind of where we're at. So this idea that everybody's got to be special in society, and you can't like single out anybody for how very special they are. I wonder if they're going to drop that like a hot potato, or if that actually is going to be a continued theme in this film, because I think that that goes against the grain now in a way that it didn't quite go against the grain then. Like the idea that everybody gets a participation award and that everybody is somehow unique, like the term that sometimes is used is a snowflake. You know, I wonder if it's going to go there or not, if it's going to keep that theme going or if it's going to just drop it like a hot potato. That's what I wonder about this new film.
Two final questions. We have obviously seen in the age of movie sequels, which is now totally expected of almost every film, that sometimes sequels just ruin things. Sometimes they make them better, sometimes they ruin things. I'm thinking about an animated film that I thought was about as perfect as you could be, which was Up. Mm-hmm. And if they ever made a sequel, I would, as a matter of principle, not go see it because you can't improve on what was there. It was a one-off, and that was what it ought to remain. Do you think the same could be said of The Incredibles, that they might be better off just leaving it as the great thing it was and not trying to build on that?
We'll find out, and you're in luck because I'll tell you next week. So I could just say, hey, Todd, you can enjoy the one you saw, watch it again, and forget about the new one. I'll be able to tell you. Like, I don't know. I think that this is becoming a bit of a problem in general. Like, another way of looking at it, because the director, had talked about this himself, this idea of like the money on the table and all that kind of thing, and really wanting to have some sort of good product to give, like, an actual story that people would care about. You know, like, some of these franchises are like a literal golden goose, right? So if you keep doing it right, you were going to continue to make that money. And what we see is there are some franchises out there where the golden goose is literally being strangled to death. You know, so Star Wars is one where right now it's not looking so good. So they've kind of cheapened all of it, and it's going in a bad direction. So you know, sometimes maybe things are good, what, like, left behind. Like, you just leave it the way it was, enjoy it for what it is, and create new things. You know, and that's not a bad thing either.
We did, on the issue of Star Wars, have a question from a listener recently about something they thought we missed when we did the Han Solo film. Mm. And that was the theme of sacrifice between the Solo character and his female counterpart. What are your thoughts there, Ted?
Yeah, I, you know, you don't want to necessarily give away everything when you're reviewing a movie, I guess. I mean, if the statute of limitations have passed and it's been 20, 30 years or something, you can kind of do that, maybe more so. But I don't know about that. I certainly see how Han was doing things in order to, like, putting himself into situations in order to save and help Kira, who he had to, like, leave behind when they were both trying to get off of Corellia, the planet that they were on at the beginning of the film. But I mean, I guess one reading of it is that Kira is doing things, she re-enters the story later, she's doing things that would be to, you could read it in one way that she's doing things to protect him because he's naive, or, you know, wet behind the ears, etc. Although that's not the way they portray him really in the movie. But I don't know, I think that she's actually bad news and not a good character. That was my read of it originally. I don't know that she was sacrificing to save him as much as she's just bad news, and she's going to really break his heart bad. Like, the plan is to do three of those movies, and I don't know if they're ever going to do it because it's making very little money. But if they make more, you know, Solo, a Star Wars story movies, you know, I think that what they're pushing towards is, you know, the revelation that she's actually, you know, not this childhood love of his, and that she's going to be one that kind of breaks his heart and turns him into the person who's not sure about things, and like a more curmudgeonly character in the future, and jaded, etc. So I think that's where they're going with it. I don't know that she was making choices that are to, that's not my read of it. Like, I don't think that they were both trying to help each other out all the way through. That was my read of it.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. Taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And as he mentioned, he'll be back with us next week for a review of Incredibles 2. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Johanna in Illinois, if you'd send information for your local movie theater to talkback@issuesetc.org, we will send you a $25 gift certificate to the theater. Thanks for everybody who had their questions for Pastor Geese. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., the church is remembering the prophet Elisha. We will do so as well with Dr. Walter A. Meyer III. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.